Well, thank you very much for the invitation to speak to the Moral Sciences Club, and thank you to Tim for having me here in Cambridge at all. I'm grateful. Okay, so I want to talk about the old problem of the statue and the clay. So there's a question of whether the statue that's made of clay is one thing or two things. One reason to think that, probably the main reason to think that there's only one thing, is that physics seems to tell us that we can't have distinct physical objects occupying the same place at the same time. We'd like to avoid having to say that we can. But on the side of saying that there are two things, for one thing, the clay existed before the statue did, you can assume, and it can survive the destruction of the statue, so you smush. You've got a newly made clay statue, and you smush it, you don't have the statue anymore, but you still have the clay. So that's a reason to think that they're not identical. And four-dimensionalists, those who think that physical objects have temporal as well as spatial dimension, have offered a solution to this problem where they say, well, the clay is a spatio-temporal continuum, it's something that exists in time as well as space. And the statue is a time slice of it. It's a part of it, a statue-shaped part of this of the clay. And they're not identical. The clay, the statue is identical to a part of the clay. And this is supposed to explain our intuitions. However, an example given by Alan Gibbard in his 1975 paper reveals that this won't exactly work, because Lumpel is a lump of clay that is formed by bringing two lumps of clay together. And Goliath is a statue brought into existence by bringing those two lumps together, because one is top of the statue shaped and the other is bottom of the statue shaped. So the statue and the lump, Goliath and Lumpel, Goliath is not a proper spatio-temporal part. Lumpel, they come into and go out of existence at the same time. So if the statue is identical on the four-dimensionalist view to the statue-shaped time slices of clay, then Goliath and Lumpel are identical. Still, right, when Lumpels, you can smush Lumpel without smushing, I'm sorry, you can smush Goliath and destroy Goliath without destroying Lumpel. So it still seems that they must be distinct, and I think four-dimensionalism isn't going to help us solve this problem. So what I suggest is what I'm calling, though I'm changing my mind about what to call it, phase metaphysics, where what I want to say is that Goliath, the statue, is a phase of Lumpel, where a phase of Lumpel is Lumpel in a certain state, namely having a certain shape. And so I think the relation between the statue and the clay is the same as the relation between an ice cube and the water, the H2O molecules it's made of, a paper airplane, the paper it's made of, or a fist and the hand it's made of. So here's a statue lump style puzzle for the fist. All right, here's a hand, it's not a fist. Here's the fist. But I can make the fist go away without making the hand go away, so must we say that there's two things here? Well, no. I think the obviously right thing to say is a fist is a clenched hand. It's not a distinct object from the hand. The fist is a term that we use to refer to hands when they're clenched. So an ice cube, going back to this example, an ice cube and the water it's made of are not identical. The water continues to exist if the ice cube is melted, but they're not distinct coincident objects. An ice cube is a quantity of frozen water. And so the reason I picked, the other examples, paper airplane isn't distinct from the paper, it's the folded paper in a certain way. A fist is a clenched hand, as I said. A clay statue is a shaped in a certain way, determined by the sculptor, piece of clay. And so I think it's no more problematic that a statue and the clay it's made of exist in the same place at the same time than it is that an apple and a green apple exist in the same place at the same time. So suppose we coin the term grapple for apples that are green and rackle for apples that are red. And so in that case, unripe Macintoshes are grapples, and ripe Macintoshes are rapples. And grapples are not rapples. Grapples are green apples, and rapples are red apples. So these are terms that I just made up, denoting apples in different states, having different colors. So a grapple can cease to exist. Something can cease being a grapple without, an apple can cease being a grapple without the apple ceasing to exist. But grapples and apples are obviously not distinct, coincident objects. So the reason I chose the term phases is that physicists talk about different phases of matter. So liquid, solid, gas, and plasma are phases of matter. Liquid water. Water is a tricky term because I think it both means colloquially liquid water, and it also means H2O. So if someone asks you for a glass of water and they bring you a frozen glass of water, you wouldn't say you got what you wanted. So colloquially, we mean liquid water. We say water. So these are different phases of matter. There are different matter in different states, matter with distinct properties. So water is liquid H2O, ice is solid H2O, steam is gaseous H2O. So this asterisk was reminding me to tell you what I just told you about the colloquial use of water. So water, ice, and steam are phase sorters. They refer to H2O when and only when it is respectively liquid, solid, and gas. Gaseous. So I'm suggesting paper airplane fists and statue are also phase sorters. Goliath and Lumpel, on the other hand, are phase nominals. There are names for things that apply to things when and only when the things are in a certain state. So the reason we think you can make Goliath go away is that Goliath is a name of the lump with a certain shape. Something like maybe, though this will probably get me in trouble, a state of affairs. Goliath is the name of a statue. Lumpel is the name of a lump of clay. A clay statue is a lump of clay with a particular shape, with a particular shape decided upon by the sculptor. Now, there's lots of complications having to do with sculptures and how much can you change it that are really irrelevant to the main point I want to make. So I think it's best to keep in mind the example of a hand and a fist or an ice cube and the quantity of water it's composed of. So Lumpel need have no particular shape because it's a lump. And the sort of lump doesn't connote any particular shape at all, just a certain quantity of clay. And that's why it can survive this squashing, the radical change in its shape. Goliath must have the shape decided upon by the sculptor, more or less there's issues there, because it's a statue. And this is why it can't survive the squashing. Because in order to be that statue, it has to have that shape. So I think we should distinguish between questions of constitution and questions of composition. So the composition question, or what Peter Van Inwagen calls a special composition question, is under what conditions do two or more objects compose a single distinct object? Or under what conditions does an object have other objects as proper parts? I'm thinking these are equivalent. Maybe they're not. You can tell me if you think they aren't. But I'm treating them as equivalent. Constitution question concerns the relationship between an object, a physical object, and the matter out of which it's composed. And this question can arise, as I'll illustrate, for simples, if there are such things. For objects, physical objects that don't have any parts. Whereas the composition question doesn't arise for simples. So I think these are distinct questions. Okay, so now suppose that there are ultimate physical simples. The opposing view to this is the view on which matter is infinitely divisible, and infinitely divisible matter gets called by some people gunk. So if you're not familiar with that term, that's what I'm talking about, infinitely divisible matter. But suppose that there are ultimate physical simples. Let's call them basicons. So if basicons have contingent intrinsic properties, then there can be phase sorters for basicons, terms that refer to basicons when and only when they instantiate some contingent property, which they, of course, may lose. So, and I think where there are phase sortals, statue plate type puzzles can arise. So we could run a statue lump type puzzle with basicons. So let's suppose that, fancifully, furriness and cuteness are contingent intrinsic properties of basicons. As whimsical as charm and color for quarks. Well, then we could introduce furicon and cuticon as phase sortals, where a furicon is a furry basicon and a cuticon is a cute basicon. And furicons are not identical to the basicons they're made of. So a furicon can cease to exist without its constituent basicon ceasing to exist. That is, a particle could cease to be a furicon without the basicon ceasing to exist. So, but furicons and basicons aren't distinct coincident objects. Furicons are phases of basicons. A furicon is a furry basicon. So you can run these statue clay type puzzles with simples. And this has nothing to do with composition problems or questions. So it was suggested to me that basicons, if there are such things, can't have contingent properties. They must have all their properties necessarily. And that doesn't matter because I think there actually are relational phase sortals. And so they don't have to pick out objects with different as having different intrinsic properties. So here's an example, my favorite example. A meteoroid is a space rock less than 1 meter in diameter traveling through space. So let's say maybe orbiting the Earth. A meteor is such a rock when it's falling through the atmosphere. It's been attracted by Earth's gravity, it's falling. A meteorite is such a rock having fallen to the Earth's surface. And so what determines whether something's a meteor, a meteoroid, a meteor, or a meteorite is its relation to the Earth. So imagine a meteoroid orbiting the Earth. An astronaut passing spaceship pushes it towards the Earth. When it enters the Earth's atmosphere and starts falling, it's a meteor. So, and a meteor is not a meteoroid. So let's pretend this can happen without any intrinsic change, any loss of matter in the rock. Or you could suppose that it's a basicon meteor. Because meteoroids can be very, very tiny particles. They tend not to make it to the surface of the Earth. But okay, so the astronaut who pushes the meteoroid into the Earth's atmosphere has destroyed a meteoroid and created a meteor. That is, she's made it the case that a meteoroid has ceased to be and a meteor has come to be without doing anything to the space rock intrinsically. Certainly without destroying it. So, but meteoroids, meteors, and meteorites are not physical objects distinct from, but coincident with space rocks. They're relational phases of space rocks. There are space rocks in different relations to the surface and atmosphere of the Earth. Space rocks with different relational properties. So, phase sortals can connote relational properties as well as intrinsic properties. Now, let's go back to the symbols. Suppose there's a culture that worships basicons, and suppose that they're especially fond of them when there's a full moon, and they think that basicons become sacred at the full moon, and sacred, they call them sacricons when the moon is full, because they become holy, they become sacred as a result of the moon being full. Relational property. So an individual basicon becomes a sacricon when the moon's full and ceases to be one when the moon is not full. Analogous to the clay becoming a statue when it has a certain shape and ceasing to be a statue when it loses that shape. Only these are relational properties. So the basicon goes through this change without any change of intrinsic properties. There are no sacricons when the moon is not full. So a sacricon can go out of existence without its constituent basicon going out of existence. But they're not distinct coincident physical objects.
all sacrocons are basicons, but not all basicons are sacrocons.
Right? All fists are hands, but not all hands are fists.
Sacrocons are phases of basicons. Basicons when the moon is full. Full moon basicons, we could call them.
Okay, so now stepping back and talking about this in a more general sense, I want to talk about the, with respect to physical object, its material content, meaning the matter it's made of. And this could be a simple or a plurality of simples, or a schmear, that's a technical term, of a gunk, right? Some quantity of gunk. So the view I want to push is that anything that's not a simple or a schmear of gunk is a phase or of a simple or a plurality of simples or a schmear of gunk. This includes atoms, molecules, lumps of clay, statues, fists, paper airplanes, ice cubes, apples, and everything that's not a simple or a collection of simples or a schmear of gunk. And this is consistent with saying the only objects there are simples or schmears. We're saving that term object in the sense in which there can't be two objects occupying the same place at the same time. You could say the simples or the schmears are the only objects in that sense. And this is the view that gets called nihilism in the composition debate. So, and this view is also consistent with a kind of universalism, which is not... So universalism is the view that for any arbitrary objects, more than one object, there's another object that they are proper parts of. So my nose and Trinity College. There's an object that has those parts. Universalism says composition, object-making composition, is completely unrestricted. Now, I don't want to say that yet, but I do want to say that on this way of looking at things, any plurality of simples or schmears can be the material content of an F, where an F is a sortal, provided they collectively instantiate the property of properties connoted by the sortal. But I want to say no such F is a co-located object distinct from its material content. So that's where I disagree with universalists. And ultimately, I think you can, and this might be where I have to move away from thinking of just phases, and I'll have an example if there's time later of this, that there is a way of understanding universalism where you have sortals referring to things, which have sortals referring to arbitrary objects collectively, so to speak, where it doesn't follow from that that you have to say that there's an object in addition to the objects, or what I would say phases, that compose it. So here's Peter Van Inwagen. He says, there are no tables, only simples arranged table-wise. I think, rather, that tables are simples arranged table-wise. That's what they are. But they're not further co-located objects. So the worry that Van Inwagen has is, okay, so you've got these simples arranged table-wise, and then you also have a table in addition to that, an object that those are all parts of. And that seems weird. Where does it come from? And it's co-located with all of these other things. And but no, you don't have to say that at all. You say that's what a table is. So a table is a sortal that refers to clouds of simples arranged table-wise. That's what a table is. And it's not a distinct object for any of those things. So a table is a phase sortal whose extension is simples arranged table-wise. So an F can be an arrangement of other phases of material content. So for example, cars are particular arrangements of car parts. So so a car is a phase of car parts, and of course each individual car part is going to be a phase of its components, etc., 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 down to the simples or schmears, whatever there happens to be. And
cars are not identical to their parts because you can destroy a car without destroying any of its parts.
I would say you completely dismantle it, you're not a car anymore. But you still have all the parts that make up the car. So the car is those parts in a certain arrangement.
Garages are also particular arrangements of various kinds of parts. But they're not identical to their parts because you can destroy a garage without destroying its parts. So I would say car and garage are phase locals. So now going to an example of Eli Hirsch. He says, look, there are no in cars, things which are cars and garages. You got the garage and you got the car. If you want to say that when the car is in the garage, it's an in car. And when it comes out of the garage, it's not an in-car anymore. We don't want to say that because are there in-cars? Well, over and above cars and garages? No. But I want to say, well, yes. Because look, some cars are in garages. This is overwhelmingly, probably, an objective fact. It's going to be highly unlikely that there's no car in any garage anymore on Earth. So let's rely on that. So if we wanted or needed to, we could coin a sort of in-car, which refers to cars when and only when they're in garages. Are there in-cars? Well, my answer is, are there cars in garages? And if the answer is yes, then there are in-cars. But are in-cars something over and above cars and garages? Well, in a sense, yes. Because the car has to be in the garage in order for it to be an in-car. But no, not in any sense that offends anti-coincidence scruples. So you've got an in-car and a car occupying the same place at the same time. Well, yes, in the sense of you have a car that's in a garage. That's unproblematic, at least in this context. And you have the sorrel that picks out cars when they're in garages. Now, Why would you do this? Well, it might seem it's completely useless, but I think it's easy to imagine circumstances in which such a term would become useful. Imagine a cult of car worshippers. Well, here's another example. Suppose in a certain metropolitan area, disaffected youths start dyeing their hair blue and hanging out in the shadows with sharpened screwdrivers. And this might be a cause of some concern, and the police are going to keep track of these individuals, and so they come up with a name for them. They call them droogs. So, is a droog a distinct object from the person who is a droog? No, a droog is a person with blue hair, charm, screwdriver, hanging out in the shadows. So we introduce this term to pick out individuals in certain states. That is, to pick out both the individual and the property. I need to work on this more, so I'll say less about that. Okay, and then we have Kit Fine saying a ham sandwich is an object over above the bread and the ham. It's ham between two slices of bread. Now, I read this and I thought, yes, you agree with me. So if you say I'm going to give you a ham sandwich for lunch, and you've got one piece of bread in London and one in Manchester and a piece of ham at Peterhouse, that's not a ham sandwich. Right? It's a ham sandwich only if the ham is between the slices of bread. So I asked Kit Fine, so is that a distinct object from the bread and the ham? He said, yes. Distinct co-located object. And I say, and I think common sense overwhelmingly says, you don't have to say that at all. He said, ham sandwich is a term that refers to bread and meat when they're in a certain arrangement. A phase, so to speak, of the bread and the ham. Okay, so some phases are naturally occurring. Water, ice, and steam, meteoroids, meteors, meteorites. Another one of my favorite examples, ermines and stoats. An ermine is a stoat with a white winter coat. And maybe when ermines were given their name, people didn't realize they were just stoats with fur that's turned white in the winter. But then they found out, but they decided to keep the name ermine for stoats only in this sort of condition. And if you think about the good old Hesperus Phosphorus example, it might have been that when the ancients discovered that these names both referred to Venus,
they might have done the following. They might have said, yeah, but we're still going to use Hesperus to refer to Venus in the evening, and Phosphorus to refer to Venus in the morning, appearing as sort of part of the sky, blah, 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 etc. That is, they could have used them as phase nominals, but they didn't, but they could have. We do this stuff all the time.
Kittens and cats, also an example of this. And some are human-made, like statues, fists, paper airplanes, towers, in-cars, and ham sandwiches. So, this is not hylomorphism. Hylomorphism is the view that says structuring a material content, or giving it a form, results in an object. And I deny this. Because I think it entails that the statue and the lump are distinct objects. They have different forms, so they're distinct objects. Giving the new clay, a clay a new form, makes it a new object. So that means either that there are distinct co-located objects, or that when you make a statue, the lump disappears. And Burke has a view that's kind of like this. When the lump ceases to exist when you make a statue. And I don't think that happens at all. So I deny both of these. So I don't think this is a form of hylomorphism. And also, did I forget to put this on the slide? Hold on. Oh, yeah.
So actually, the previous slide had something you didn't read out.
Yeah, this is a slightly mistaken slide. So another thing I want to say is the example of meteoroids and meteors, that doesn't involve structure. It's purely relational. So hylomorphism doesn't have anything to say about those examples, which I think are an example of the same sort of thing that's going on with the statue and the lump. So also, the view that I'm promoting doesn't depend on any unifying principle or principles as hylomorphism does. And finally, this view can reconcile nihilist and universalist intuitions in a way hylomorphism can't. So it's possible to introduce sortals for arbitrary collections of Fs, Gs, etc., and to sensibly speak of such things without thinking of them as true of objects in any problematic way. So I want to apply this view to an example from Ned Markosian when he's arguing against universalism. He says, well, is there an object whose proper parts are the Eiffel Tower and my shirts? And I think the answer to that is obviously no. And I could agree with him. The universalist says yes, the nihilist says no. But the nihilist's answer is consistent with saying that nonetheless, there are what I'm going to call Markosian. A Markosian can be understood either as a phase of the Eiffel Tower or as a phase of Ned Markosian's shirts. So, Markosians are, here's the two definitions, Eiffel Towers when Ned Markosian's shirts stand in the relation of coexistence, because what Ned was imagining is not that they stand in any special relation to each other, but just they both exist. Okay, so let's take coexistence as a sort of very, very basic relation. So we could say either that Markosians are Eiffel Towers when Ned shirts stand in relation of coexistence to it or them, the only one, or they're Ned Markosian shirts when the Eiffel Tower stands in relation of coexistence to them. So the immediate material content of Markosian is the Eiffel Tower and Ned Markosian shirts. Well, so then we can ask, are there Markosians? Well, is there an Eiffel Tower and the Ned's shirts exist? Yes. Okay, so they're Markosians, but they're not objects distinct from the Eiffel Tower and Ned's shirts. But also, since being a Markosian requires the existence of both the Eiffel Tower and Ned's shirts, it's not possible to destroy a Markosian without destroying either the Eiffel Tower or Ned's shirts. So we're not going to get a thread of coincident objects here, the way we do with the statue of the clay. But it remains the case that just as one need not think of a statue as an object independent of the clay, one might need not think of the Markosian as an object different from the Eiffel Tower and Ned's shirts. So are there Marcosians? Yes, in fact, there's only one. Assuming that today, that you know, that has a certain number of charts. Are they objects? No. Only simples or smears are objects. Marcosians are ultimately phases of the simples or the smears. So why believe in such things? Why think there are such things? Well, I think the reason for believing that they exist are the same as the reasons for believing that the Eiffel Tower and then Marcosian charts exist. Another objection, they're useless. Well, no, they're not. I just made use of them to illustrate a point. So basically, the idea is, look, there are certain states of affairs that exist in the world, and we can invent terms that refer to them. And what we're referring to is, in the immediate case, is some things in a certain state. So there's a hand, there are hands, and we introduce the term fist to refer to hands when they're clenched. And we can introduce phase nominals, right? This is Hans, this is Fausto. This is not Fausto. Why? Fausto is the name of the fist, and this isn't the fist. Right, so there are certain states of affairs within the world, and we can sortalize them by coming up with terms that refer to them, to those particular states of affairs, without thereby being committed to having introduced or created with language new objects. The objects are there. We just created new sorals that refer to them in their different states. So there's no threat of coincidence. So, summary. Any F, I don't want to talk about objects, right, because that has a proprietary sense. So any F for some sortal that isn't a simple or a schmear is a phase of a simple or simples or of a schmear. And simples, schmears are the only objects in the privileged sense that there are. And phase sortals connote states of material contents. The extension of a phase sortal is material contents in those states. And phase nominals are names of particular material contents in states connoted by phase sortals. Clay statues are not lumps of clay, but lumps of clay with sculptor determined shapes. That is, they're not just lumps of clay. They are lumps of clay with a specific shape. So you can think of it as a state of affairs, and the sortal statue picks out, clay statue picks out that state of affairs. And when that state of affairs ceases to obtain, the term doesn't refer anymore. So a lump of clay with the sculptor determined shape is a phase of the lump of clay. The immediate material content of the clay statue is the clay it's made of. But clay statues are not objects distinct from but coincident with lumps of clay. They're phases of lumps of clay. Destroying a statue without destroying its material content is simply changing the shape of the material content. Okay, so do I have any time left?
Sure.
Okay, because I've got some possible extensions of this way of thinking about things to other puzzles. So there's Tibbles and Tid. In case you haven't heard, Tibbles is a cat. Tid is all of Tibbles except his tail. Tibbles and Tid are not identical. Tibbles can survive the loss of the tail. If Tibble loses his tail, nothing happens to Tid. After tail loss, Tibbles and Tid occupy the same space. This is the puzzle. So if Tid does not equal Tibbles, they're distinct, co-located physical objects. But if we deny that they're distinct, contradiction results because we have before tail loss, Tibbles is not identical to Tid. After tail loss, Tibbles is identical to Tid. Generates a contradiction. So, what to say? Well, here's one thing you can say using the apparatus that I've described. You can say, well, look, Tibbles is a phase nominal. It's the name of a cat. Cat is a phase sortal. It denotes material content arranged cat-wise. It's also indifferent to whether or not the thing has a tail. So, tailless cats are still cats. So cat doesn't specify whether there's a tail or not. Tib is also a phase nominal. It's the name of a kit. Kit is a phase sortal, denotes material content arranged kit-wise, but kit is not indifferent to the tailedness of the things in its extension. This is a vulnerable premise, so take note. A kit is all of a cat except its tail, a proper part of a cat with a tail. So, if Tibbles had no tail, the description, all of Tibbles except his tail, wouldn't refer. So, and Tib would not refer, because Tib refers to a kit, which is all of a cat except its tail. And you can't have an all of a cat except its tail unless the cat has a tail. So, Tib is a kit. A kit is a proper part of a cat with a tail. Tib does not survive the tail loss. Why? Because the tailless thing is a cat, but it's not a kit. Because it doesn't have a tail. A kit is a proper part of a cat with a tail. When you lop the tail off, you don't have anything that's the proper part of a cat with a tail. So it's not a proper part of a cat. It's not a proper part of a cat. So I have a little riff on the ship of Theseus. Can I go on?
You've spoken for 35 minutes.
I have.
You have.
Should I slow down?
No.
Okay.
But so if you're fine to stop now if you wanted to, but if you want to just...
I can stop now. I mean, we can talk about this later if you want.
Yeah, why not? There's no such thing as a bad short talk.
Okay, I'll stop.